selling.
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Scotch and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board and a cloudy day here in Chicago. S&P futures down 53. Yeah. NASDAQ futures down 234. They were way worse than that. The S&Ps were down 100 last night when the first attack from Israel to Iran, and then I guess they sent some stuff back at Israel. Nobody seems, I'm not reading the whole details of who did what. It does seem to be some of the higher-up Revolutionary Guard people and some of the guys who were involved in the nuclear program in Iran appear to have been killed. So wherever they landed these missiles, they landed them, I guess, at the right spot. So there's a couple of guys that killed airstrikes, kill armed forces and Revolutionary Guard chiefs. I think there might have been a nuclear guy in there, too. But do we have Professor Kevin?
Good morning.
How are you? I didn't hear much about the drone strike back at Israel. Was it totally ineffective or what? I mean, I just heard they did it. Now I'm not really reading any detail.
I don't know if anything got through, but if anything did, it appears to have been minimal.
Yeah, I'm a little weirded out on this, Kevin. I'm trying to figure out what exactly. Don't they have to go over somebody else's country to get there? They don't have any contiguous border, do they?
I don't know. I'll pull it up on the map.
That's what I'm doing right now as we speak. Yeah, I mean, I guess anybody can fly over Syria, right? I don't think they have much of a protection there from anything, do they? I mean, I don't know. I don't know where the whole history of that is, but I will pull up a map. Where's Mr. Murphy when we need him? Because his Middle East, God, does it get more complex every year we're alive, Kevin, does it seem, or what?
Well, I don't know. How complex is this, really?
Well, I mean, I'm talking about going back. Who made the borders? Who did this? How the hell the Shah got out and this guy got in the first place? Well, his predecessor. I mean, it's just been a long run of crazy stuff since really the discovery of oil, huh? John Lee gave me a book, and I'm about a third of the way through it, about America's presence in the Middle East. And, God, we were there like the... I'm not saying we were wrong the whole way, but as soon as the oil got... Actually, oil was... discovered in Iran. I would never have guessed that, would you? I thought when I say discovered, the original well from the British guy who was there, and it was like his last well before he gave up. He struck oil somewhere in Iran. And I think the Saudi stuff, I mean, I thought, didn't we learn in school that in some spots in Saudi, the stuff was like gurgling up out of the ground? We had so much of it. And yet, somehow or another, the first well was in Iran. And as soon as that happened, boy, it just seemed like all kinds of stuff was going on over there, and they had, didn't Churchill and T.S. Lawrence, weren't they the guys who, like, basically did all the boundaries in the whole area? I mean, designing where Iraq is and where Iran is and everything else? Crazy stuff, but, I don't think Iran's doing too good. The Houthi guys got clobbered, the guys in Syria got clobbered. They're losing everywhere, doesn't it seem?
Yeah, and they've taken such a hard line that it's pretty hard for them to find any way to be conciliatory here.
Yeah, when Farah used to come on, Farah's from Iran, I mean, I stopped kind of looking at it, Kevin, but isn't it pretty much true that, 80% of the people don't like the people that are in charge there or something? I mean, they really have a tight fist on the place. I mean, most of the people there were pretty westernized under the Shah, weren't they?
Yeah, but if you want to, if you want to control the people, just disarm them all, and there you go.
Yeah, well, didn't the Shah promise he wasn't going to, or the Ayatollah promise he wasn't going to do that when we put him over there, and then he did anyway? I don't think you can trust
That's so unseemly for a religious leader to do that.
They're not exactly the religious leaders like we think they ought to be. I've got, to get from Iraq, well, where's Iran? Iran's further over yet. To get from Iraq to Iran, you got to go through Syria or Jordan. it appears. Iran is all the way the other side of, you got Iran, then you got Iraq, then you got Syria, then you got Jordan, then you got Israel. And to the south, you got the Saudis. So somewhere along the line, you got to go over like one or two countries. Do you just do that without talking to them? How does that work?
Maybe they do talk to them.
They might. Well, who do you talk to in Iraq? I guess they got a government there. Syria's kind of a mess, huh? Jordan, there's a guy in Jordan, right?
I guess something else would probably tell them you're doing it, and if they don't like it, tough luck.
I'll bet you could get you can get from the, well, if you were actually going to talk to people, the way to get there would be to go over Jordan and go over Saudi. I'm sure you could get the Saudis' approval, right? They don't like the Iranians too much.
No, they don't, but they'd be hard-pressed also to be doing dealings with Israel, although there's been a long standing point of view that they would jump in on the Abraham Accords after the king died. So you do have the prince is a little more inclined to deal with the Israelis.
You got to pick your enemies. Who's my worst enemy becomes your friend somehow. It's kind
of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah. Well, see, we got two enemies. Who do we like the worst today? what a way to live, huh? I mean, it's we were talking with Lou about who all these people sort of are yesterday, and I'm kind of surprised that when the guy took over Syria, he thought he was like one of the crazies in originally, and I don't know, is he talking to the West, I mean, more than we originally thought he was going to? But he doesn't control the whole country either, does he? I don't think.
I don't think he does either, but I don't know. They've been so out of the news lately, I haven't paid any attention.
Pretty scary what gets in and out of the news, eh? I mean, it's, anyway, it was, this is big news. We got oil way up, we got gold up, but oil's up to $69. It was, last week, Kevin, every day saying, I can't believe this oil has been so sleepy at 61. That changed, huh? Up like 15%.
I wonder how quickly I can get out and top off my tank.
Yeah, no kidding. I used up all my, I have Myers points, and if you have a bigger vehicle like I do, if you get enough points, you can get a dollar off on your gas. So if you play it right and you go in there and you got like a gallon left, I can save like $23 or something, just to do it, right? But I don't know if I have enough points to do that tomorrow or Sunday. I could be paying retail. That would suck, eh?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, hey. I was doing a little, I don't know why yesterday, Kevin, I was jumping all over, but I was doing some research on, I went to see who wrote the line of, currencies will always drop to their intrinsic value. It was Voltaire, talking about a long time ago. So I was going through some of the history of inflation and so forth in this country, and you really wonder why, when this has kind of been so obvious, how inflation happens and who it hurts and who it doesn't, really since the time of the Roman Empire and maybe before, you really wonder why it still is allowed to happen and who is, we've been bandying back and forth on politics the last couple of days, probably too much, but this drive on inflation and this policy really has been, I'm going to say it started, who was president in 67? Was it Johnson or Nixon? One of those guys. Must have been Johnson, right? Or when was the...
Johnson would have been elected in 68 and took office in 69.
Starting with the Bretton Woods thing, where we went off the gold standard, and then Nixon did something else. Starting really back then, through every party, we have been, with the possible exception of the couple of Volcker years where we, reeled back some of it, we have been at essentially a Roman sort of thing to debase our own currencies and to really hurt the people that hurts and help the people that helps. And it's been relentless through every single administration, and it's going on right now. As a matter of fact, Trump's bitching at the Fed for not doing more of it. And the Fed has been increasing the money supply. And then I went back and did some history. There's somebody's guy, I think this is a, do you ever remember these guys, Hillsdale College Group, Kevin?
I know who it is, yeah.
They're kind of a conservative, I think, think tank. But some of these guys write really good articles. This was a... And if you don't... This is how hard it is. Back in whatever year this was, we wanted to be on the gold standard, and this is in 1879. So they said, okay, we're going to go out and redeem the greenbacks and all that stuff. And the ratio was it 16 to 1, 16 gold to 1 silver, right? Which was the market price at the time. But then somebody struck the Comstock load. Was that Virginia City? Wasn't that where Bonanza was? Somebody struck the Comstock load, so you ended up with way more silver, but the ratio went to 20 to 1. So the government was still paying 16 to 1. So everybody starts spending their silver and keeping their gold. I mean, people react. The great line here was said here, with the gold standard keeping the value of the dollar steady and the silver policy greatly increasing the money supply, the government managed both to forbid inflation and guarantee it at the same time. How's that for a line?
Pretty good, actually.
Yeah. And you look at what has sort of happened. Well, I mean, there's other policies that causes this, Kevin, but you and I mean, we've been out of school a ways, right? And just look at our university. I mean, I'm going to say we know more about it than other ones. I'm sure they're kind of the same. University of Notre Dame, when you and I went there, tuition was, I'm going to say, $3,000, $3,500, somewhere in there. Room and board was a grand. And people, I'm saying most people, most people who worked probably made, I don't know, what do you think your dad made in 1971? 18 grand, 20 grand, something like that?
No, probably more than that, but, you know, even if you were doing really, really well, if you made like 30 grand.
Yeah. But still, you're, say 22. So the cost of a college education was essentially, you know, 1/7 of a year's pay. Right? In the university, I think, it probably had some degree where they didn't cover all the costs with tuition, Kevin, but it probably was reasonably close. What would you know more about that than me. What would you say it was? And they still had donations back then. But I'm going to say it came pretty close. So maybe, I mean, it wasn't like 1/10 or anything, was it?
Oh, God, I don't know. Whatever it was, it wasn't buttressed by federal financial aid as much.
No. Well, it wasn't not by loans anyway. Well, I guess some people got loans, but were these loans? Oh, who were the loans from? Well, if you got a loan then, who'd you even get it from? I didn't need one.
The state of Illinois had guaranteed loan programs, so they would guarantee the loan, but you would just normally go, you know, there were banks that participated in it.
Okay. So I'm saying we went from, and this is what, you know, without looking at the different policies of the different presidents, because they've all pretty much been the same. And here you are essentially 50 years later, and you're talking 70, 80 grand. You're talking a school with, you know, billions of dollars in their endowment. Because if you had any kind of fixed investments, except for bonds, stuff went way up faster than people's salaries, right? The stock market certainly has. And now you're in a situation where the tuition is double, essentially, a median wage. That is... If you just look at it from the big picture, Kevin, and don't dig into which president and which party did something, it is friggin' relentless. And it's exactly similar. I know some guys don't like me going back into history, but it's exactly similar to what happened to Rome and the Weimar Republic. When Rome came out with their currency, was it denarius? There was enough silver in there essentially matched the day's pay, which was, you know, makes sense, right? At the end of the day, you get a coin, and the coin was worth the day's pay. And as time went by, you could draw a correlation to, you know, to the degradation of Rome and the degradation of the currency. You can do the same thing with the Weimar, you can do the same thing with the Confederacy. And yet, why is it we don't seem to learn, and we're doing the same damn thing? I mean, I don't think I'm wrong on this picture, am I?
No, I don't think you are. The question is, why don't we seem to learn? because people, there's a lot of different viewpoints, you know, political viewpoints, probably a good five or six, actually, and some tend to align to one side or the other. But one of those viewpoints is, in its least cynical way, is that government is there to do a lot for people. And that, you know, so there's a lot of people aligned with that. It sounds good. It sounds well-meaning. It just doesn't work. It never works. There are some things government can do pretty well, but not very many. And so I think, you know, just from a philosophy standpoint, that's, you know, that drives a lot of it. That even the most well-meaning people in government think they're doing people some good when they're not.
Well, I'm saying from an economic standpoint, whatever people think government should be doing for people, I'm taking the role of government totally out of the currency role. I mean, I think they're totally separate.
You talk about things like college. That's exactly what's happened. Government intervention into that market has just made it more expensive for everybody.
Well, maybe it's. Well, I'm trying to separate the policy. I'm trying to focus on currency policy, Kevin, because I don't know what the policies were in Rome. I mean, all I know is that they started pounding out a hell of a lot more currency than they had silver, and all of a sudden over a period of time, the place totally degraded. Same thing with the Weimar, same thing with Argentina, same thing with Venezuela, and the same thing, to a certain extent, is happening here. I mean, and the thing of it is, all through those ages, the same people got... Let's take an example. And when Robin and I first started, we started going out when I was at Pullman, a long, long time ago, we were friends, and she knew, you know, she's Jewish, she knew a lot of people in New York that I met, and Kevin, if you went out to see some of these people, they had these spectacular apartments in New York. And there were a lot of people here. The apartments at Hyde Park were spectacular, some of the ones even in Rogers Park. People rented their entire life. That's just what you did. You sort of didn't get screwed on it. There was no big difference between owning and renting. And then all of a sudden, and if you were going to do too long one of an answer next time. People who had traders on the trading floor, I lease seats and back traders. And all of a sudden one day they go, there's not going to be any traders anymore. By the way, the seats are now the value. And we're going to charge people for quote fees, and the people who own the seats are going to make a fortune. And the people who used to rent the seats for traders, by the way, you guys get the part that goes over the fence last. But I'm saying, if you were to do a pure economic analysis, which I think both of us maybe still could do, you would say that the return on rental in a free market economy, return on would end up being slightly above the risk-free rate. Because it's a little riskier than the T-bill, right? So if T-bills return 4%, the equilibrium return on a rental should be 7.5, or something like that. And the person who's paying the rent, if he can use his money somewhere else in his business and making 8 or 9, he's way better off renting over a long period of time. And it should not be this incredible favor towards ownership versus something else. It should all be in equilibrium. But it isn't, and it hasn't been for, I'm going to say, 50 years. Now, it isn't because somebody somewhere, or just people's attitudes or whatever, or maybe, you know, maybe it's an elect. I don't think it's anybody individually elected, because nobody's ever run on this program that I know of, left or right. Yet over a long period of time, he says, no, wait a minute, the guy paying the rent now, he's paying an absolute fortune, way more than the increase in income, and the guy who owns the place is now, you know, a bazillionaire. That just on something that's not that risky. It's not like you got a new hula hoop, or you found a new, you know, a software package or something where it's innovation. This is this simple crap, and it's just the people who were the owners did way better than if the guy renting the apartment managed to buy something somewhere else and got on the gravy train somewhere else, he's probably okay. But if he didn't, he's just a regular. This is kind of economic inequality over decades. And, you know, and we can say it's...
Also, why did home ownership rather than rental become such a priority?
I don't know.
Well, it was decided, there was decisions, very conscious decisions, that we wanted people to own homes, that's for stability. You know, there was a lot of things that you can say for that. So let's make all of your interest on your home tax deductible. And as soon as we do that, then there's a big bias.
When did that happen? I should know that.
That would be a good one to look up, because I don't know what year that was. But as soon as we did that, then we just launched into home ownership for people as the way to go.
You think part of it was that since we are inflating the place, really since 67, if you were a nice person or thought you were nice, you probably wouldn't want to have BlackRock owning all the houses. You'd probably want regular people owning as much as they could of what you're trying to do to the economy, at least bring a few people along with you, which it sort of did, right? I mean, if you owned a house, you've done okay.
Well, yeah, I like I said, I think a lot of these things, you know, people are, you know, to just, I'm not going with a blanket assumption of this, but people believe that this is a good thing, and we're doing a good thing by people, by making the homeownership a priority and subsidizing it with it through the tax code. So you know, I remember back before everything blew up in 2000, the Bush bubble, but really leading into the 2008 crash, and you know, Tony Snow, who was the spokesman for the White House, I remember him being out there saying, here's why the economy is so great. Look at all of these people who are owning homes now. That's an indicator of a great, healthy economy. Yeah, well, back in a couple of years, Tony.
Actually, Kevin, the it dates back to 1913, but there's a caveat to that. In 1913, the tax code allowed deductions for interest on all personal and business loans, with no distinction made for business or personal expenses.
Correct.
This is because at the time businesses were often family-owned, and it was difficult to separate business and personal expenses. It was not a targeted housing policy. So there. So it was just part of any other interest.
Yeah. However, when we removed it in the 70s, was it the 70s or 80s that we removed the personal loan interest deduction, so you couldn't use your car loans or anything. What happened? Well, we can't take away the mortgage deduction, so we didn't. And then what did that encourage? People taking out home equity lines of credit to buy cars.
Well, in Tax Reform Act of 1986, who knows, was president in 86?
Reagan.
This act significantly changed the landscape of interest deductions by eliminating deductions for consumer debt interest, like credit cards and car loans, while preserving the mortgage interest deduction. So, when I was in graduate school, Kevin, there was a push, and probably some people still think it, but they get tired of pushing it, about, you know, if interest is a business deduction, it should be taxed. You should be able to deduct it. If it's just part of long-term financing, you shouldn't be able to deduct it. Or, what I would prefer is you get to deduct dividends, because I think you should be able to. You should tax them twice. So, a lot of people, I mean, I don't think there's a debate that if you and I are in the electrical business, all of a sudden we get a job at McCormick Place, because they always seem to be expanding, and the contract calls for us to front all the money on, like, the, you know, the conduit and wire and all that crap until we get paid at the end, that if we have to go get a loan, if the O'Neill and Howe operation could get a loan in today's world, if we were to go get a loan for this job, I don't think there's much debate that the cost of that money is a cost of doing business for that particular job, right? I don't think anybody would debate that.
Right.
But if we decide we need more capital, instead of selling stock, we go get a long-term, we put out bonds. Not so sure why 30-year bonds are deductible, but dividends aren't deductible. So now you start to get into, wait a minute, I'm not so sure that's the same thing. So, I mean, with a lot of what we...
And I'll say, the more you engineer the tax code, the more you can, line item by line item, start to favor those you want to favor the most.
Yeah, and I
that's the corruption side of it. So I talk about the well-meaning side of it, the side that sounds good, it sounds like we're trying to help people, but there's the other side of it that just starts to say, who do I want to favor?
Well, when you say help people, who are the people? what, those get helped to help themselves? Or something. It, you know, it's one of the biggest debates that Dr. J and I, we kind of like you and me, we agreed on the direction of just about everything, maybe not the process. But he was absolutely convinced that we needed to simplify the tax code. And my response, I mean, I dealt with it a lot more than he did, but that's neither one of us were close to how Bob dealt with it. But the tax code started out as simple. And it's people's attempts to get around it. And they would do it for a while, and people bitch, and all of a sudden you'd have to put another line in there, and another line in there, and another line in there, because people are pretty imaginative. And at the end of the day, I think it's complex, a combination of trying to stop people from cheating and favoring people that somehow get their nose into the writing of the tax code. Would you agree with that? I mean, it's some combination of that, right?
Now it's a convoluted mess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're... it's a convoluted mess. Well, if you used to be able to deduct interest, and now you can't. I mean, that's one of the... Every time, really, in my lifetime and yours... That's why when you say we should get rid of this deduction, the problem comes down, and Reagan did it, and we've had a couple of guys do it since then. Everybody wants to lower the tax rate and get rid of the deductions. So the next guy comes in and says, hey, the tax rate used to be 35, and now it's 31. We'll just bring it back to 35. Well, you're not even, are you? Because the deductions are still out, right?
Yeah, but there's all the other ways that we tinker with it as well. You know, what was the, first of all, there is, you know, they don't use normal depreciation methods for capital investments and treatment of capital investments for businesses. They have a specific government cost recovery schedule. So you start dealing with that. Okay, we have that.
There's some logic to that.
Yeah, well, there is some logic to it, but it's used as a tool of economic policy. So if you go back to, you know, Bush's tax plan that was a recovery plan, one of the things they wanted to do was they want to encourage people to make capital investments in things like trucks. So what happened? What happened is every small business owner in the world went out and bought a new truck for the business. An SUV, because SUVs were categorized as trucks. It's one of the reasons SUVs became so popular. So,
Kevin, what was the deal with that?
I can buy a car for use in my business, but I can go buy a truck and get extra special tax treatment. So, yeah, everybody I knew who owned a business had a brand new SUV. This is the kind of crap, you know, we keep trying to manipulate it line item by line item. And this is what makes it a mess.
Well, it's how much of the tax code? How the hell can I get this out without insulting everybody, Kevin? I probably can't. How much of the tax code?
That often enough anyway.
I know how much of the tax code is predicated on the lack of knowledge of most of the population.
Well, I don't know, but yeah, it's got to be some value to keeping it mysterious.
I mean, what you just said, now, if we explain fully, now that I remember exactly what that was, because I have a friend who took advantage of it, shall we say. Let's say, for instance, Stocks and Jacks was a money-making operation, and we had a chunk of change here. And I say I had 50 grand a year in income. What Kevin's talking about, this thing was for businesses could go out and buy trucks. Now, when you think of that, you would think that Kevin and I are in the plumbing business, And guess what? We go out and buy a plumbing van, right? Well, I don't think anybody's going to complain that the cost of that van is part of our business. Right, Kevin? I mean, I don't think...
Correct.
But what Kevin's talking about, it not only became a van or a pickup truck, now it became an SUV. So what my friend did, and what I could have done, I mean, I guess, is if I go out and buy the 25 at the time, $25,000, $30,000 SUV from Stocks and Jacks, it became instantly deductible the first year, correct?
Well, instantly with accelerated depreciation on it. So
I think you got to take the whole price the first year.
Off of your taxes.
I think you got to take it all the first year.
I don't know if it was that good.
I think it was.
It was big. Whatever it was big. We can agree on that.
Well, the fact that you can depreciate it, okay? If it's 30 grand, you depreciate over 3 years, you still get to take 10 grand a year, which you can't do as a person. Right.
You may use it for personal use a lot, and theoretically you're supposed to delineate between the two. I don't think a lot of people were.
Well, so what exactly would the use have been for Stocks and Jocks? To do what? Go out and cover murders at night?
I get those producers in every morning.
Yeah, well, yeah, I go pick the producer up. But, but what Kevin's talking about, these are intended to goose. But
But it was a tool of economic policy, one of many that were built into that, that had cost recovery benefits. In fact, that was probably more so than rates. Almost always it's more so than rates. That little tweak to the tax code had more economic impact. And it's that kind of stuff. And then does it go away? When does it go away? Does it get changed? We're constantly doing this stuff because we think we're doing some good with it. And all we're doing is screwing up the economy.
I think, you know, to a lot of ways, Kevin, we know who we're benefiting. We know who's not smart enough to take advantage of it. And we love the difference. Simple stuff. I mean, something that I think pretty much everybody deals with. If PTI pays for your health insurance, it's deductible. If I pay for it myself, it's not. Well, who the bleep? Well, it's almost like if somebody kicks you in the ass every day walking down the street, I guess you get used to it, right? It still doesn't make it right. How many people you know, Kevin, that, I mean, I do because I know people that do a lot of remodeling and stuff like that. How many people do side jobs? Or for them, it's not a side job. They have a business. They're carpenters or something, and don't have Kevin O'Neill Carpentry Inc. where you can deduct your insurance and actually just pay for it on their own checkbook. I'm going to say millions. Do we even try and educate anybody? What are you guys doing? Make this an LLC or something or other, some kind of a partnership or a corp or something, and you can deduct it. How many people? What do you think? If everybody wised up today, what do you suppose the federal the taxes would income going to the government would go, and we don't seem to care, do we?
No, I don't think so. you ask the question, you know, how, why? Well, it's kind of where my view of where it is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that this is. Let's just hope. For a lot of reasons, for a lot of people, from my standpoint, managing money, I think because the interest rates were so low for a long time, even though the market continues to want to go up, although it's not going up today after this stuff last night, at least not yet, I am absolutely convinced, Kevin, that governmental policies in terms of fixed income rates being so low for so long, and people are in the market, and the market's done well, okay, so it's done. But if you were to start from day one, and most people, if I were to say, I'm giving you a blank piece of paper, and I'm giving you this amount of cash, okay, you've saved up $2 million, say, tell me where you should be. I guarantee you, in 90% of the cases, it does not match the person's portfolio. And this is not me giving investment advice. I'm saying your own advice doesn't match your portfolio. But nobody wants to change it. Yet the risk continues to grow by the day. And I told you the conversation I had with a guy, you know, I knew the guy before COVID. He's kind of a character. But he showed me his portfolio years ago, and I didn't really want him as a client. and he didn't want me. So that was fine, because he had a bunch of tips that he'd gotten on TV, and these were the best stocks in the world, and he was never going to rebalance, never going to do anything, never going to protect them. I said, well, you don't need me for that. And so now, a month ago, I see the guy for the first time in ever, and he starts showing me his portfolio. And he's telling me, oh, it's this and that, I've done it great on this stock and this stock. His name's Jeff. And I said, Jeff, all that's well and good, buddy. The only difference is, 5 years ago, you were working, making a good living. Now you're retired. This is it, except for Social Security, bud. The market hasn't changed, your portfolio hasn't changed, but you sure as bleep have. What do you mean? What do you mean? What do I mean? But you can't. It's very difficult. When I say this, Kevin, I say it from experience. Sometimes, if you're having a rough time on the trading floor, I would actually, and somebody else was, we'd trade each other's positions and look at them and go, God, this position sucks. Sometimes you need another look at things. But I'm saying a lot of what you see, and when I'm going with this, is that when I started the business a long, long time ago, the maximum deduction that you could take on a losing stock trade or bond trade or any asset trade was $3,000. The market was 800. Where the hell's the Dow now? How many thousand, for God's sake? It's the same number. How is it through 40 years of administrations and how many different tax bills has nobody said, boy, this number's a little light? I mean, really? And yet, I see this stuff and I see people fighting back and forth, making it look like they're trying to do something. And yet, when you look at the economic side of it, it's so direct. It's almost like somebody who's directing the economy is outside of the government or something. It has nothing to do with left or right. I mean, you'll see some tax back and forth. Somebody will favor the corporations a little bit and the next guy won't or something, but all on a very marginal scale. The actual drive towards inflation, to people who have assets making more and more than people who don't, the income not going up as fast as asset prices, this has been relentless since, for God's sake, you and I were in high school. And yet, why? Where's the Milton Friedmans of the world saying, what are you guys doing? Nobody even talks like that anymore. And yet it's worse now than or the same as it's ever been. I don't know. Do you see anybody trying to change that at all? I mean, I surely don't mean the... That's why, I mean, when you and I, we've been Cub fans forever. 1982, the Cubs, I think, traded, Kevin. Didn't the Tribune buy him from the Wrigleys for 21 mil?
Yeah, something like that. That sounds about right.
So I'm going to put 21 mil into the CPI calculator in 1982. I'll give him a break on the year. Okay, 21 mil. 2-1, dot, dot, dot. How about we put 21,000 in there and we can add the stuff. In January of 1983, and now to May of today, that number should be, it should have gone up 10 times, right? So it should be worth $210 million. What's it worth? $5 billion?
What's that?
I mean, when you look at stuff like that,
that's actually not a fair analysis for that, because that assumes that the nature of the business, the conduct of the business, is static, and it's changed a lot over the years.
I get it.
Available revenue streams, everything involved in there has changed. So I don't know how I would go about, figuring out what a reasonable valuation is. Does it sound incredibly high? Yeah, it probably is incredibly high. It probably is overinflated, but I don't know what that means.
Well, according to CPI, it should be up 3 times, and it's up 30 times. You look at the policies over the last 40 years, and you say, okay, what contributed to that? Maybe the interest rate back then was high and it came flying way down. Maybe it's because it's a monopoly. Duh. What if Major League Baseball didn't have a monopoly? As it started to grow, do you think there'd be more than 30 teams? Or be another league that might be AAA or AA that's actually a league? I mean, there's all kinds of influences here, but every piece of wind was blowing in these guys' direction, right?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the technology changes behind it too. The ability to do streaming, and for and MLB owns its own product rights and so on. Those are a lot of things that have just changed the nature of how you make money in professional sports in general, but specifically to Major League Baseball. Well,
yeah,
so what I'm saying is you can't just say the CPI says it would be this.
Okay, but it's, if it was two or three times as much, or four times as much, or even 10, maybe I'd roll with you.
But yeah, I don't know what the number should be, but you know, and I granted you that it probably still is too high, ridiculously inflated. I don't know what to make of it, but I do know it's just not a straight. You apply the CPI, and that's what it's going
to
be worth.
Yeah, just one arrow in the quiver, because I don't know how you take the monopoly out of it either. I mean,
you don't. You can't.
Yeah,
that's a factor as well.
But I mean, this. But the let's go the other way. In 1983, when we first got our tickets, they were $3.50, and so today they should be $11.50. I think they're $75. We could go that direction too. These are just talking points, Kevin. It's just the difference between how, over a long period of time, economic policies have favored owners versus users, over owners versus renters, clearly owners of businesses versus employees. And I don't know what you from the labor side probably come up with 15 reasons why that happened. And the economic side, I could say interest here and there and all kinds of stuff. Maybe it's, you know, there's a million reasons, but here's where we are. And now we're talking about how exactly we're back to how does the middle class or lower class afford their health care, especially if some of the stuff is getting cut back from somewhere. We'll see if it is or it isn't, or what it even means, how much is being cut back. I don't know. I can't dig that out of the bill. Maybe it's nothing. But even if it's nothing, I challenge anybody who's making 50 grand a year that has any kind of an illness to pay for it themselves. I mean, good Lord, can you? There's no insurance.
Okay. The way I've been feeling lately, I hope not.
Well, by the way, I hope you're 100%, are you?
No.
It's a long cold.
It's semi cold. Digestive tract issue.
We want you 100%, bud.
You tell me about it.
How can I fight with you if you're sick?
Oh, you somehow we manage, don't we?
Somehow we do. But if you were an investor this morning and you got a nice fat portfolio, What are your thoughts on this thing in the Middle East? It's kind of nothing until it's something. Isn't that your line?
I don't really have any thoughts on it because we have to see how it unfolds. You know, what concerns me? Well, a major escalation of the war in the region and a protracted escalation of the war. It also concerns me that we've olayed people into the country for the last four years or so. And I don't know what kind of... Elves are sitting here waiting to try to enjoy the U.S. and the whole thing too, and to cause damage here in the country. So, you know, there's lots of ways this can escalate in very, very bad ways for us, and I don't know what to make of it.
Well, I actually was looking at I got stuck on a YouTube thing, but a couple of my buddies were bitching and moaning about this Real ID. And I was saying, what is the purpose of this? You know, I guess it's, you know, whatever. It's trying to be more secure or something. Who knows? I guess to get on a plane. You don't need a real ID to live here, but you need one to be on a plane somehow. And the guy says, the amount of resources that has gone to this, the amount of hassle over 9/11, he says, does anybody forget that not one of those guys used a driver's license to get on the plane? They all use passports? How are you preventing 9/11 by a real ID when none of them use their driver license?
Oh no, it's all working so well, Tom. Don't
I know. I see the audits that we have here. We just completed one, or hopefully we're getting it completed. with Finrenner. We get someone 3 years. Not like we did anything bad. We didn't. And you just look at all the questions that everybody's looking for, Kevin. Are we always chasing the last horse out of the barn instead of going out and finding where, instead of preventing the next one from leaving the barn? I mean, do we have any foresight in, you know, the thing in 2007? Should the Fed have seen that coming? God, yeah. They didn't. But they were worried about the last crisis. I mean, I'm sure we have people someplace, in government, I'm convinced, in other places, that are actually pretty bright and know something. Do we ever reach the point where those guys make it to the top, or those women? And somehow or another, it just seems like you talk to these people and you go, where have you been? You've got this job. You don't seem to know anything. I mean, you run that yourself in your business, or is it just me?
Oh, what about who rises to the top?
Yeah, it's just...
Well, it's college, Tom. Of course, it's a political organization.
Is it real bad, though, or just okay?
Depends. It goes from year to year.
Well, I think you guys are way better in Illinois. I mean, so from what you and Russell talk about, in terms of coordination, there must be some people there that know what they're doing.
Yeah, we do. But again, we just got done with the term of a just god-awful governor who completely turned around the idea of how many consecutive surpluses the state of Indiana had. So, you know, now we're back fighting a lot of the same battles of where are we cutting, and who's affected, and what are we going to do about it?
Kevin, if you could pick, I'm not asking you to be a state senator, but if you could pick three or four line items that caused that, what would they be?
Well, where I think the big cause is I think it was the dishing out all the COVID money. It was like, hoo-ha, let's go. We can spend like crazy. Not ignoring the fact that, all of this stuff is going to have to go away someday. And that's going to piss people off. And it was money spent on things that had nothing to do with COVID because...
Yeah, how did that happen? That there was no strings on it.
I don't know. I think Illinois is still spending money that's...
No, they spent the rest of it. They made sure like 6 months ago or something.
They got it before it was too late. Okay.
Well, I'm trying to retrace the history of it.
It happened, but God, it makes no sense.
Well, Trump sent out all the checks to people. When did the aid to the government stuff, was he part of that, or was that all Biden?
I'm sure he was. I don't know what his... I can't delineate between the various bills anymore. I don't remember specifically. Carl might, because he's pretty good at that, so you should ask him. He can jump in now if he wants. He's online, so...
Yeah, it's a... I mean, some of the... Was it... I mean, they weren't just putting whole units together that now they can't get rid of, because... Obviously, if it was a medical unit put together for COVID, you'd think that they'd be gone, right?
Well, yeah, okay. So remember there were a couple of rounds of actual checks that dropped in everyone's mailbox.
Well, there were three.
Right, and the first one of those was Trump's.
Second one too.
The second one might have been, but yeah, I mean, so the idea that this was all Biden is, you know, it's a load of BS. And
actually,
then
let me interrupt. I think when Trump was running and lost, one of his biggest bitches was that the government or the Congress cut down on the amount he wanted to send.
Right, and so well, and then the other thing that is worse, okay, and led Biden's administration to believe that they should do the Inflation Reduction Act. I know they called it the other thing, but you know, it is what it is. Was that Trump, as one of his first acts, turned when COVID started, turned around and blew billions of dollars on what ultimately was absolutely worthless medical equipment.
Oh, the hospital ship and the
ventilators.
Yeah. Well, okay. The McCormick Place and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, and also all the, you know, so-called temporary shelter things.
Yeah.
And, you know, all
well,
this.
I mean, the hospital ship and it cost a fortune.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of money that was thrown around without any evidence that it would do anything. And by the way, the ventilator thing was especially pernicious because we knew within the first month of the outbreak because China tried using them. Okay, I mean, that was, you know, at the beginning, nobody knew anything, right? We didn't know how to treat this thing. We didn't know what to do with it. And, of course, as it turns out, yes, we did, because it was man-made. And, oh, by the way, even the DOD had white papers out that said, hey, this thing is clearly that. I mean, I knew it within the first 2 weeks of the sequences being posted, because all I had to do was...
Has there been any official announcement from anybody that it actually came out of this lab and we were part of it?
No, because then you'd have to take care of the... Then you would have to deal with the fact that we had technology transfer from that lab into the United States a couple of months before the outbreak occurred, which is hard proof that we were involved in it, right? It's not supposition, it's proof. And all of a sudden now, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, the Chinese were a bunch of idiots and this thing got out, okay? But then you start asking questions. Hey, wait a minute. Why is it that we have U.S. universities that are playing with this? And incidentally, if you think this crap has stopped, may I point out that three Chinese nationals have been caught smuggling biologically dangerous and active things into the United States, headed for the University of Michigan in the last couple of weeks. There's been zero reporting on this.
Are we still, Kevin, you're still with us, right? I want to run some of these education numbers by you that I was forgetting earlier because I got off on my usual economic tirade. Are we still thinking that it was an accidental, somebody in the lab wasn't careful and caught it and went home? Are we still thinking that that's what happened?
Chief, here's
and it wasn't on purpose. I mean, is anybody accusing anybody of that?
Careful there. I'm not convinced, and I'll tell you why. Back when, around Thanksgiving of 2019, which, of course, was before we all knew about this thing, right?
Well, before we knew about it, but other people knew about it.
Well, yeah, but around Thanksgiving, I was traveling, just for grins and giggles, and in several different Walmarts in several different states, I observed groups of Chinese nationals, pretty clearly Chinese. I mean, maybe they weren't. Maybe they were Vietnamese. I don't know. But certainly Asian people, okay, who were fondling in very odd ways the electronic displays in the stores. Now, my assumption at the time was that, and I wrote an article on this, my assumption at the time was that this was an organized theft attempt. They were testing the anti-steal, the laptop and phone stuff, right? Yeah. That's what this was. As soon as COVID broke out, I became a lot less certain of that, because the other thing that could have been is an attempt to deliberately inoculate Americans with the virus.
They didn't have to do that. All the people who were the corporate people.
I understand that, but you know what? We did attempts to do this kind of thing are as old as humans. You know, we did gift blankets to Native Americans that somebody just happened to have had smallpox when they were using them. Right? So, I mean, this is not a wild-eyed nutball concept.
Right. Let me run this by Kevin while he's still here. And evidently, the latest round of negotiation has the Chinese students still back in the U.S., right?
Yes, apparently.
Now, I'm asking Kevin this before he dashes. I was kind of surprised, Kevin, that there's more Indian students here than Chinese. I did not know that.
Yep.
I've got 277,000 Chinese, 331,000 Indian. Now, if you look at just the Chinese, and I'm trying to estimate what the tuition is, but of course they got to get them here and they got to eat and everything else. Just the Chinese piece is $20 billion. That's a pretty reasonable hit to education, isn't it? I mean, if they all of a sudden just weren't, I don't think it's going to happen, but I mean, what does that do for schools? I mean, or God help if they toss the Indian group out, we're talking 600,000 people. I had no idea it was that big.
Oh,
I mean,
it does very little for the high end schools because they all have huge endowments and they can suffer quote in quotes a little revenue hit. But your average college, you know, there's still, you go to Western Michigan up here, a lot of schools like that, they still have a large Chinese population. They have a large foreign population, and they don't have any, you know, quite that kind of endowment or budget. They're dependent on the revenue. So it's going to vary from college to college.
What I mean, the Illinois piece, maybe we'll talk more about this next Wednesday because Russell. By the way, there's no show next Thursday. It's Juneteenth Day. I forgot all about that. But in Illinois, for instance, you almost can't get in to Champaign, the flagship place. And from what I understand, it's an awful lot of Chinese and maybe some Indian. I don't know. Yet, Western Illinois and the rest of these places are falling apart. I mean, the people from overseas only want to go to the.
No, you still see them at the Westerns in Southern Illinois, but not to the same degree. Because it doesn't carry the same prestige that.
So you mean there's some sprinkling down, but mostly they want, well, like anybody else, would probably want the better. No, they're going to be at Wisconsin, not as Wisconsin and Whitewater, and they're willing to pay up.
Right, and the branch schools are, they live and die on state budget. They live and die on their enrollment numbers, enrollment persistence, people getting completions, all those kinds of things, because that's what the models are for funding them. That's all an important piece of it. They're just having enrollment down because people are starting to realize that they can make a pretty good living without a bachelor's degree.
Well, the drop down you and I guess, went to some place that had a name in the Midwest. Now, I guess, has a name everywhere. But if I went to Indiana in the business school, obviously Indiana's got one hell of a name in business now. But if I did my first 2 years at Ivy Tech, at the end of 2 years, am I really that as far behind as the reputation would indicate? I'm thinking no.
No, you're not. And in fact, you're in really, really good luck, because you might have had me to teach you some of your business core, and I'm better than the rest of them anyway.
God.
I'm so good, I don't have to brag.
Hey, next time I talk to you, which is probably Sunday, be 100%, will you?
I'm working on it. While we were talking, I just booked a doctor's appointment for Monday, so we'll see what happens.
All right, bud. Well, good luck on that. Carl, are you with me?
Yeah, I certainly am. This is one of these things. I don't know where the hell we start today because.
Let me run a couple of numbers by on the China stuff, because I scribbled them out here. I got to at least use them. That first of all, I have no idea if these numbers are correct. The one I think is correct. The Chinese investment in treasury debt here is $749 billion. They used to be the number one, and now they're two to Japan.
Okay.
The U.S., how they get this number, I have no idea, Carl. That's why you're going to probably tell me it's wrong. U.S. investment in China from people here, BlackRock and the pension funds and everybody else, they got it about $127 billion. But here's a number I find really interesting, because Chinese invested huge here back in the day. I mean, they bought the golf course, they bought a whole bunch of places in Chicago. Right. They basically got their ass kicked. Actually, it was the Japanese. Wasn't the Chinese. They got their ass kicked on like every building here. But they claim China's total investment in the U.S. other than treasuries is only $28 billion.
Yeah, there's all sorts of I mean, when you dig into where, what flows where, right? Because, one of the debates that you and I have had, and it's a legitimate debate, is flow versus stock, right? They're not the same thing, okay? And yet
I did a final on that with Milton Friedman. I know that.
There's a lot of people, Chief, that think they are, and they're not.
No,
okay?
They're not.
But, that there's even some rational relationship between them in terms of economic impacts, and that's BS, too.
They should match up someday, whenever the someday is.
Well, someday, sure. And on an infinite forward horizon, we're all dead. Yep. So, good luck with that.
The thing is, what I you know, where we've gotten entangled, and it's due to the political environment that we live in, but it's not new, and it is, as I've pointed out, it is something that has happened to virtually every Democratic Republic through history. All right,
that's what we were talking about earlier, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, it is the most common thing that happens. I mean, if I challenged the other day in my column, I challenged people to go find exceptions, and somebody actually turned around and pointed it at one of the AIs and posted the response.
Oh God!
And, well, I said, you know, hey, if you can find an exception through the reasonable annals of history, because you know we do write books about things like this, let's have it, because I don't recall any that haven't ended up this way ultimately. And basically the AI came back and said, well, Dettinger has a point.
What'd you think of the line earlier from this guy who wrote this? I probably should give the guy's name. John Steele Gordon. This is one of the most incredible summaries of inflation in the U.S. since day one. I think it's like a 10-page pamphlet. I think with the gold standard keeping the value of the dollar steady, and the silver policy greatly increasing the money supply because we discovered a lot more silver in the Comstock lode. So the government managed both to forbid inflation and to guarantee it at the same time. I love that line.
The basic problem you have, and it's like, you know, I have debates like this on my forum all the time. This always comes up. But one of the things that people say is, you know, you want to solve the illegal immigration problem, you want to solve this. It's very simple. Just kill all welfare, and it'll sort itself out within a few weeks. Okay, and it's more likely that the Dallas Cowboys cheer squad is going to show up and pleasure me tonight than that we will kill all welfare in the United States.
Yeah, we're not going to, because we've beaten people down so much that they can't afford the stuff themselves.
Well, and that would correct if you were to get rid of it, right? Because that's the supply and demand is the first immutable law of economics. However, what would happen in the meantime would not be a lot of fun, and oh, by the way, good luck enacting it for that reason, right? So the thing is that you have to look at what practically can be done, right? And where can you leverage things that are within existing law, because those are things, you know, if you actually turn, and by the way, I'm going to give this current Congress and our president, even though I don't particularly care for either, all right, and haven't for a long time. But I will give them credit for two things that actually are very positive for American industry, and one of them was just the other day. Just yesterday, I think it actually was. Trump actually signed it yesterday. And Biden screwed up in that he gave them the ability to do this without having to get through the Senate filibuster because of the CRA, which is a law that allows Congress to kill things that an outgoing administration does within a certain amount of time. Okay, so and that makes sense. I mean, the congressional
except for pardons.
Pardons you can't undo. Pardons are an absolute executive authority. Okay, but if you have policy decisions that were made by an outgoing administration within a relatively short period of time when the new administration comes in on a simple majority vote, the CRA allows them to be rescinded. And that's a law.
When you say a policy decision, the policy never went through Congress in the first place.
Well, right? it sort of did. And I'll tell you where this came from. Okay, where this came, this is the CARB stuff out of California. All right.
Well, now, yeah, CARB, I was reading all about that. Yeah, your thing, by the way.
Right now, CARB originally got the authority from Congress to issue their own overrides to 49 state emission standards because of
which they've done for 50 years.
Yeah, but Chief, the reason it originally was there was that LA had a horrible smog problem due to the inversion layer that frequently shows up there in the weather. The natural phenomenon just has to do with the way the terrain is laid out and where the wind comes from. Denver, by the way, has problems with it too. Okay, same reason.
I think Salt Lake City might as well.
Yeah, there's. I mean, it's a feature of topology, basically.
Yeah.
It is what causes it. But back in those days when we did not have catalytic converters, we had carbureted engines, there was a huge amount of unburned hydrocarbon that ended up coming out of the exhaust of your vehicle. That, along with this inversion layer, produced an absolutely
When people don't know what that means, used to be able to drive into the city, and there was like in a clear day, you could see a layer of something,
yeah,
roughly about two-thirds of the way up the John Hancock Building.
Yeah, it was terrible.
It wasn't way up. It wasn't fog that was all the way up to the ether of the sky. It was just a layer of crap that kind of hung there.
Yeah,
and it was probably 2,000 feet off the ground, right?
Yeah, and it was very bad.
Yeah.
Okay, and so California got a waiver to be able to set their own standards in order to attempt to mitigate this. And it was terrible for human health. It was terrible, all right, no doubt. Well, that's the reason for it originally. But what happened over the years is California decided to try to take the rest of the nation by the balls and say, and have nothing to do with this. So like the latest incantation of this essentially banned heavy diesel fueled trucks from the state of California and banned all RVs that use diesel engines. And the reason is that the way that CARB wrote the regulations, for every diesel powered engine that was in a particular class of vehicle, you had to have a certain number of electrical ones. Well, there's a problem with that with RVs, and that is nobody's going to buy a battery powered RV.
Oh God, no.
Okay, so as a result, the end result is you banned RVs.
Well, the theoretical issue here, though, Carl, is the same people sometimes, maybe this is a minor shot, the same people that are all over states' rights when it behooves them are anxious to tell a state if they don't like what they're doing that they can't do it. So, I mean...
Well, except every vehicle that goes on a public road...
You know that I'm with you on this.
I'm saying in this issue...
Has there ever been two people on Earth that argue more when they agree on stuff than you and me?
Well, I don't know. Maybe not. But, I mean, on this issue, every single motor vehicle is a thing in state commerce.
I'm absolutely with you on this, and I know the history of it, maybe not as well as you, but I also know... The same guys that will run on a massive states' rights campaign. The minute the state doesn't do what they like, they can't wait to go after them.
Nonetheless, when you're right, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, and I don't care whose mouth it comes
out. You can't start banning if you still had all those problems and if stuff was as dirty as it was. I get it, but you can't have all these wacky ideas when every truck and railroad car in the country is coming to your place because you got a port.
Right. Well, and the thing is that. Well, yeah, and that's just an accident of geography.
Well, you used to need a port. Now we don't need a port so much because we don't let anything in. But
you have an ocean there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's an accident of geography. The thing is that so what Biden tried to do was grant another overriding waiver. And by the way, the CARB thing didn't stay in California. You had states, including Virginia, which by executive fiat, they didn't even take a vote in the legislature, adopted those standards within their own states. So it didn't stay in California. It ended up being about a quarter of all of the automotive.
A lot of this stuff, Carl, even though I push back on a lot of stuff with you, you're preaching to the choir. We get audits from the bureaucratic groups all the time. And it's a bunch of people sitting there opining and coming up with things on a daily basis, just thinking of what people should do when they're not even in the industry.
Well, the other thing goes along with this is that the coordination between the states is explicitly illegal under the Constitution. The Constitution requires that all interstate compacts only occur with the explicit consent of Congress. So you, in order for you to do that legally under the Constitution of the United States, Congress has to pass legislation that enables an interstate compact. Now, they've done this in a few instances. One of the ones that I'm very familiar with, because I used to do some work in this area for people that had gotten screwed by the various state courts, is the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act, UCCJA, which essentially prevents, or supposed to anyway, prevents somebody in the middle of a divorce or after a divorce from jurisdiction shopping in order to have the case heard where they want it heard. It has to be, the UCCJA says you can't do that. You have to bring the case where the child's habitual residence has been, okay? But in order for that to be able to be passed in all 50 states and be binding, Congress had to pass a law to enable it, because the Constitution says otherwise you can't do that.
Right.
All right? Now, that's an instance where it was a good thing. They did it. It's good, okay, because it stopped a lot of the crazy abuses that used to go on. Now, of course, there's others, but that was one where it actually worked the way it's supposed to work. This, however, with CARB, was absolutely unconstitutional in the way it was done. And so, but Biden made the mistake of playing along with this and in giving into the crazy side of the party. I suspect,
but you could,
he did.
You can think of situations. I'm not Mr. States' Rights and stuff, but there are federal water standards. But if 100 people live around kind of a pristine lake and want to make their standards stronger, I don't see why they can't.
Well, in the general sense, I agree with you in that regard. Okay. What I'm saying here, though, is that so Biden did this. What that did was open up the ability of the CRA to be used to kill it, okay? And so, but, you know, time limited. Now, for the CRA to be used, however, you have to actually pass a bill, all right? It's not an executive action. This is not something that Trump did unilaterally. Can't do it unilaterally. That don't work. Well, they got the bill through Congress. And so now all of these set-asides that are state-specific, and it's retroactive, by the way, they're all gone. And there isn't, Trump signed this.
I'll bet there's some there that you and I would agree with.
Well, you know what? It doesn't matter. They're all gone. And because it was done through an actual law,
not
an executive.
How deep into the detail do you think Trump went when he signed this? Anywhere?
Well, I read the actual bill.
Give me if it was me, and boy, then it wouldn't be me.
Well, it took me a couple hours.
But I'm saying if it was me, yeah. Or I think if it was you, you'd say, okay, I understand where you're coming from on this. Give me a random sample of 10 out of 1,000 of these things. I want to know what exactly we're talking about.
Right.
Is it Carl's Lake that they don't? You know, you get to put a certain amount of poop in there, and he doesn't want any poop in there. I mean, coming from Chicago, you know,
I'll tell you what this does. This basically says that the federal emission standards and fuel standards are the only ones. Okay, does not get rid of the federal standards.
Right.
However, it says California and the other CARB states, their ability to have an override is gone.
Well, you know, and if anybody wants to know what the hell we're talking about, there's a, who was it, who the hell did it? Was it, who was the guy that did Schindler's List? It wasn't him, it was the guys that...
Spielberg?
Who did Ricky, look this up. Who did the movie short Duel, Carl?
I don't remember.
How about digging that up, Ricky? D-U-E-L. It was Dennis Weaver. It was one of the most fantastic movies. It was short. It had to do with a guy driving along, just minding his own business, like a salesman, and some trucker.
Yeah, from 71?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. It was his first thing. And people looked at this and said, who the hell is this guy? This is so incredible.
Yeah.
They had this trucker, and you never saw the trucker. And he just decided he didn't like whoever the hell was in this car. And just started bleeping with him, the whole thing, bumping into him. But you look at his truck, the reason I'm saying this, it's sort of a period piece, of what an over-the-road tractor it's not a truck, it's a tractor, trailer unit, tractor, what they looked like. And he had this huge pipe coming up. It was back when they got like 3 miles at a gallon, and there was no such thing as clean diesel or biodiesel or anything.
Right.
And the thing is just belching smoke. I mean, like, you'd sit there and go, what the hell is
that?
Yeah. And that's the way the world was, and that was one of the reasons why California and these other places went with this stuff. But if you look at that, you'd say, that's what they were talking about.
Right? Oh, yeah, and I'm not, you know, and it, look, I am not saying that we ought to, you know, kill the cats and, you know, go back to, you know, carburetors and the fact that your eyes water when you're behind somebody in at a stoplight, things like that. That, you know, obviously, no. But here's the thing. Now there is another set of related things going through the process right now. And again, it's being done the right way. And a lot of the stuff that Trump's done, you know, he's done through these executive aides, this is being done the correct way with notice and comment and, you know, the NPRMs and all the other stuff, which is excellent. Same thing with the CRA, because if I'm a car builder, if I'm if I'm Ford or I'm General Motors or Stellantis or whatever in the United States, if you want me to make capital investments and make product slotting decisions and do things that actually are going to be a benefit to Americans, you have to give me some kind of reasonable regulatory certainty, because otherwise I know I'm going to get it in my backside when Trump leaves office and the next guy turns around and reverses every single thing that he did, okay? Same thing with what Biden did. This kind of regulatory fiat crap that comes out of administrations is wrong. It's damaging.
It's got to end,
Chief. It's damaging to the American economy at a scale that you can't imagine.
I'm trying to imagine it.
We have
tariffs. We have this today. Okay, I go get a loan for the factory.
The poster child example of this is what Jimmy Carter did to the nuclear fuel reprocessing industry, which has never been resolved. Okay, and how long ago was that? Right.
Hey, we have to go to break here in 5 minutes. Hey, what do you say we afterward? I want us to get your opinion on. Spoos around 100 points last night, not around 50.
Yep.
So we have legions of people that whenever there's a dip, whether it's an asteroid hit in New York, you buy it, because whatever it is, it's you know, and to a certain extent with the money that's kind of piling in and so forth.
Well, it's been working.
It's been working for, you know, three decades.
Yeah.
But my question is, maybe we talked a little bit about this on Tuesday, one of our former contributors, who I think now he's working back downtown, might become a contributor, was all over me about it. He bought some uranium stock. It's the uranium ETF, I think.
There's an ETF.
He might have bought that thing. And he was telling me, oh, God, how come you didn't get in it a year ago when I told you about blah, blah, blah. Well, we actually do have a small, and I mean real small, position where, you know, I've got people with accounts are $1 million and I got $1,000 worth of spread in there, you know, that type of thing. Maybe 1500. So when I say small, I mean in small. And so imagine if you a $100,000 account, I'm talking about $100, basically. And he says to me, it's the wave of the future, it's this and that. And I go, Shanny, I go, what do you mean by the future? The last nuclear plant under construction was delivered last year. There's none under construction. You've got the one in Three Mile Island they're bringing back. You got
the one. Well, Palisades doesn't count. I mean, they turned that one back on.
Well, what's the one down in Clinton, Illinois? That one isn't off, and they were going to turn it off, and it was in Meta said, "Don't turn it off. We'll pay for the
we'll buy the power from it." Right.
So you got a little of that going on, but I mean, even if the regulatory environment cuts the crap down from 10 years to 7, which would be a major advancement. Plus, how long does it take to design one of these places? For God's sake,
I mean, not long. That's not the problem. The problem is every single clown face sues instantly as soon as you attempt to get a permit. And it takes 20 years.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
All the losses.
But I mean, even if you cut that to 7, which would be a major accomplishment. And Westinghouse, I did read an article the other day. What are they owned by the Japanese though? You don't hear that name at all in this community.
You know, I don't know. Well, that's because they were the ones that made the Fukushima reactors. But the other thing that's interesting about that is that there was also that particular risk was something that there was a mitigation kit for, and it wasn't very expensive. It allowed the unit to run its own cooling off the excess steam pressure, so it didn't need any power. Okay, and the Japanese never installed it.
Ah,
well,
but I mean, then, Westinghouse. For those that don't know, if you go out to Hoover Dam, and once in a while, so every several years, they'll replace one of those big call the thing that spin around at the wheel that essentially it powers the turbine. You'll see one of those things come in, and it's the most incredible thing. Like, who the hell built? Well, that's all Westinghouse, right?
Today. And you know, the thing is that this is one of the big problems. That, by the way, Google censored me talking about my article talked about this flywheel problem that we have with renewable power. They got very angry that I brought up the fact that physics is not a set of suggestions, and that when you have solar, this is why Spain had a grid collapse. Okay, it's what happened, and it had been warned about. I've been warning about it for 20 years, and nobody wants to pay any attention to it. The reality is that those turbines are insanely heavy. Okay,
okay,
they're spinning. By the way, do you know that the bearings are actually no contact fluid bearings, and they were invented something like 100 years ago. And they took one of these units out of service at some point that had been there, you know, like forever. It's one of the first hydro generators, okay? And they found essentially zero wear on this thing. It had been running for like 80 years or something. Okay? I mean, the engineering that went into some of this stuff,
you
way
can't
back
even,
when,
by the way, that's what I'm.
You can't imagine.
I'm gonna try and stump the Carl after the break. Quick story about turbines. Now, you may know this. I don't know if the listeners do. One of the huge advances in turbines were right here on the south side in 22nd Street in the Pilsen coal plant, which was, I think, the first one in Chicago. The thing is huge. They just shut it down. And that one, there were three coal plants still in the city. This was the first one. That thing was huge. And it was one of the reasons why the CBOE was built here, because they could have a full power supply from the north side and another backup supply, I don't know who was backup or who was primary, from the Pilsen area from the south side. So there were two fully complete independent electrical charges into the city, which even in New York, nobody could provide that except Chicago back in the day. We by far were the number one city in the world for being able to provide power here with all the manufacturing and stuff. But that plant, when it went up, they wanted to put a turbine in there so big, or a flywheel, whatever you want to call it, so big, and they were going to spin it so fast that the engineers were convinced it couldn't be done because the exterior piece of the turbine was going to exceed the speed of sound.
Right. Which won't work.
Which they thought wouldn't work.
Well, there's a way around the problem.
Yeah, well, something with the guy who was the head of Commonwealth Edison at the time, Sam Insull was the guy's name, who was in some cases brilliant, you know, the other case, you know, the horse's ass. I mean, he was the reason why the Public Utility Holding Company Act was enacted, because he kept buying other people's utilities for like no reason out on the East Coast, just to like to raise price. But anyway, he had his issues. But he told General Electric, "You build it. If it doesn't work, if it falls apart, I'll pay for it anyway."
Right.
So the thing was designed, went in there, and it turns out it worked perfectly for like 50 years or something. As a matter of fact, evidently, if you go into General Electric's, where's their headquarters? Somewhere in upstate New York? I don't know where the hell it is. Somewhere. In the lobby is a piece of this turbine. They were so proud of it. But how fast do those things turn? Even Hoover Dam, when the water comes through, I think they fly around at an incredible speed, don't they?
No, actually, it's not, because that's the funny part of it. It's all about the mass and the size,
okay,
because the output that comes out of there is 60 cycle power. All right.
So that's direct current, right?
No, it's alternating current.
Okay, it comes out of the generator.
Absolutely.
Wow. Okay, I thought that was all DC and you had to convert it.
No. It's brushless. That's the whole reason these things can run for as long as they have and don't have to be taken apart, rebuilt, whatever have you, is that the excitation is the only requirement to get energy into it, okay, which is the, you know, which is your brushings, right? The actual output is stationary. Now,
I felt like on your bike or on trains or anything like that where you're spinning something to create electricity was always DC.
No.
Oh, it's not. I mean, I'm talking the old days. You're saying the little generator you put on your bike tube to run the light, that was AC?
Yeah, it's alternating.
Really? I thought it was all DC. All right.
Yeah, no, there's no rectifiers in there.
Oh, so the DC is what you get when you have, like, solar and stuff.
Right.
Okay,
all right. And the thing is that when... So, essentially, the way it works is, you know, a generator is just two magnets, electromagnets most of the time, although not necessarily. I mean, you know, with electronically commutated motors, you can use permanent magnets and no... You know, no brushes and no commutator. Okay, but of course that's, you know, that assumes technology we have today we didn't have, you know, 200 years ago.
Well, the size and the metalwork energy and the workings that we got to break, and just you look at that and you go, how the hell did somebody build that?
Here's the real. You want to know what the real magic is? Do you have any idea what the tolerance is on the balance on that thing?
Oh, it's got to be. It can't be a gram or two.
You're talking about fractions of a gram, yeah, it would come apart under load.
It would fly totally apart if you didn't have that. I mean, anyway, S&P futures down 52, NASDAQ 2, and when we come back, Carl, down 250. When we come back, Carl's going to tell us who's right here, the guy that sold it at 250 or the guy down 100 and now it's 50 and he made 50, or should he get out and it's going back down? I don't know how you judge. When I say this, Carl, I say from experience because I traded in the trading pit all day long when the Gulf War was going on. And to say that there's pretty difficult stuff when you're getting news from the front 20 minutes after somebody else gets it, and when nobody knows what's going on except somebody, makes the world a little difficult. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Those are our guys. Brian Wilson, dead at 82 the other day. We were trying to get this on yesterday, but Ricky did the job. Maybe you can dig something up next week for Sly and the Family Stone. I like those guys, too. Boy, the guy drugged himself out, poor guy. Anyway, S&P futures down 49, NASDAQ futures down 37. So, again, we come halfway back on 237. Dow futures down 392. They were down well over 600. So they've come back as well. Individual stocks getting their ass kicked the most is American Express, go figure, down $6. 3M down 157. Goldman Sachs down 755. Sherwin-Williams, for all people, is down 520. Still can't get used to those guys being in the Dow paint company. Anyway, over in Europe, these guys are down pretty heavy, although they were down heavier. DAX down 262, that's 1.1%. They were in the threes when we started the show. FTSE down 6, call that flat, so they're hardly down at all. Check around down 61.8%. So somehow FTSE's kind of okay with this. Nikkei down 338.9%. Hang Seng down 142.6. Shanghai down 25.7. So nothing crazy over there either. 10-year rate almost unchanged. Up maybe 1 basis point, 4.37. The Bund up 1 basis point, 2.49. Japan down 3, 1.42. Here's the big mover. Oil up 549, 73.53. And the host of Stocks and Jacks a week and a half ago was saying, man, this oil is $61 forever. It's boring as hell. Well, it's not boring anymore. It's up, 20% in 6 days? Brent up 517, 74.53. Natural gas up 4 cents, 3.53. Gold, we're going to push up here too, up $44, 34.46. Silver only up a penny, drag at 36.31. And we've got foreign exchange. We'll see if this is doing anything. Dollar has actually, well, the euro is at 115, so they're saying dollar rally, but I don't see it. British pound up is at 135, so I'd say the dollar is steady. And we've got crypto down $2,300, but still 105.046. Ricky, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:37 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 62 degrees right now with a high of 73, mostly cloudy with a brief shower or two today. Tonight might have some rain, otherwise remaining cloudy with a low of 61 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona is 80 degrees right now with a high of 108. Sunshine and very, very warm. Tonight will be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 78 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's 25 minutes. Iman Enos from Lane Cook, 40 minutes. We're looking at about 28 minutes. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, Dan Ryan from 95th, 17 minutes, and lastly Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan, 23 minutes. Stanley Cup Final: Oilers beat Panthers 5-4 yesterday, tying the series once again. Now it's 2-2, and next game is this Saturday, tomorrow, June 18, in Edmonton at 7 p.m. NBA Finals: Thunder head down to Indiana again tonight at 7:30 p.m. and Pacers are leading the series 2-1, so Thunder might need a win tonight. MLB yesterday: Cubs beat Pirates 3-2, and White Sox lose to Astros 3-4. Today we got Pirates at Cubs 1:20 p.m., White Sox at Rangers at 7:05 p.m., and Padres at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. Back over to you guys.
Carl, when I lob out these shots at people that have more information, and I'm absolutely pissed off as far as I can be at the Trump administration's and other people in Congress, to me, looking like they're trading the hell out of every one of these announcements the guy makes.
Duh, you think?
You think. And but this all comes to me with experience. I mean, all of a sudden, one day, we're trading the pit, and a couple of firms, the usual suspects, Morgan, Goldman, those guys come in, and they start buying all these puts.
Yeah.
This is in the OEX. Now, if you traded in those days, you traded the OEX. It was the Options Exchange 100 before.
Yeah, that was the contract, right.
And the pit I was in, the pit was the second biggest exchange in the world. It was bigger than the whole rest of the CBOE, bigger than the Amex.
Yeah.
You know, and so these guys come in and buy all these puts. And 2 hours later, we start hearing this story about from Bush 1 of the surprise invasion of Iraq into Kuwait.
Yeah, what a surprise.
And I'm sitting there going, well, Bushy boy, you might have been surprised, but Goldman Sachs sure as hell wasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
And every single time for the next, 2 months of the war, or however many months of the war, you didn't have to look at the TV. All you had to do was watch the big firms come in. If they're buying calls, you know, we're doing good. If we're buying puts, something bad happened. I mean, it's scary. And to the point where, I mean, Milton Friedman said, somebody asked him a question one day, and I was glad I remember this stuff. I can't believe I do. Said, what do you think about insider trading? Now, again, Milton Friedman was in a world where everything was open outcry. You saw the person you traded to. He goes, the bureaucrats are always going to be behind on that. Let the market police itself. Well, of course, if you were to roll him over in his grave and drag him up today and see this, you know, this trading where you only have to rely on, I'll use the term, law enforcement to go get the bad guys, and they're friggin' useless at it because the guys that are doing it are the guys that they like, or they hire them, one or the other. I mean, when you see that stuff happening, but now last night, you've got this thing happens, you get this knee jerk down. I'm thinking, I think I saw the NASDAQ down 6-something, and I saw the S&P's down 99 and change, so I'm thinking they ducked under 100 at one point.
Yeah,
Now here we're essentially halfway back.
Well, now, yeah, they traded 59.25 last night.
Really? So they were down 125.
The low tick. Now it was, you know, it was a spike low, but yeah, the low tick.
But it's 75 more than the 50, so it's 125.
The,
right?
The low tick I have on my screen is 59.25.
All right, so that's $75 lower than where we are now.
Yeah.
And so okay then. So now what? Now that's why. I mean, I know that this is not investment advice. That's why for my people, and the people I have, you know, they're a lot of them are retired and so forth. When I say, I'm sure we have people at PTI that are 25 years old that we don't have any protection for because they don't need it. I mean, I don't think going forward too much, unless they already have the family's jewels in their account. We don't have too many of those. But for most people, this is what I fear. I mean, it's something that one of these days won't be a comeback, and right. we're down 40%, and I don't want anybody losing 40% on my watch. You know, I just
yeah, hello.
Yeah.
Right.
Even if they are okay with it, I'm not. Just,
well, nobody wants to see that kind of a delta in their account balance, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't care who you are, and I don't care how big it is. That's the kind of thing that, you know, gives people heart attacks.
So now, so here I am watching the TV, talking to Kevin, talking to you, looking at the market. I mean, some of the stuff here, by the way, our metals, we're going to have a huge day on our metals. I mean, probably one of the biggest days we've ever had. I'm going to say this is starting out.
Chief, metals have always been a great geopolitical instability hedge.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Well, I'm going to say that we've done at the firm probably better than just about anybody this year, because we have, and people wanted to be in, we're way overweighted gold and silver.
Yeah, I got you.
Now, having said that, to be charitable, I'm saying I was 2 years early.
And by the way, if it's something that has time value in it, early is wrong.
So should I have been in Nvidia all last year and switched over the first of the year into gold?
Yeah. And you know what? There's always somebody who says that, oh, look, I did it. They did, but that doesn't mean they'll do it again.
Hey, by the way, you never answered the question. We might want to be a little bit seeing the future and some of the uranium stuff, but I think it's kind of early to go whole hog in there. Do you?
My big problem is that without congressional action, without something that is hard to reverse, okay, and it has to be. Here's the thing.
Have you heard any hint of that?
No, and here's where the challenge is. If you do it late in the term, like Biden did with this CARB stuff, okay, it gets tossed by the CRA, all right? So that's no good. Now, if he's going to do this, and he's going to actually put a marker on the table that is hard to undo, he has to do it now, all right? Because the time will expire, which means, you know, when he leaves office, the next Congress cannot unwind it under the CRA. So if you're going to do things that actually stabilize an economic outlook and make capital investment reasonable, you want things that, in order to unwind them, you have to be able to get through the filibuster in the Senate, which means you need 60 votes.
Okay, well, from a practical standpoint, I learned about what the breeder reactor was supposed to do from my high school physics teacher. I don't even want to go into how long ago that was. I mean, if you were to come out tomorrow...
Chief, I read all that stuff. I read the entire 500 or 700 section of the library before I was 13.
Wow. See, I was never... That's why you're ahead of me on this stuff. But what I'm saying, I don't... If you were to lob a bill, if you were the representative from Tennessee, if you were to lob a bill in tomorrow saying, I want to pony up $10 million for research in the breeder reactor that people thought about, maybe get rid of some of these misspent... these used rods and everything else. How many people in Congress even know what in God's name you're talking about?
Well, that's part of the problem. But the thing is it's not what you have to do is you have to kill the regulatory challenge stuff somehow. Now, I don't know exactly how you
I'm trying to drive us off the political road into the practical road. People still think we need one, or the people around it know how to design it? I mean, all this stuff was so long ago.
Oh no! The LFTR, liquid salt reactor that can run on thorium.
Right, that's another subject,
That design, and the implementation work on it, and the demonstration that it actually works as it was designed. Okay, that it works. It's not pie in the sky nonsense like fusion has been for the last 50 years. Along with, the LMFBR, which is the liquid metal fast breeder, Fermi 1, commercially produced power in Monroe, Michigan. Okay, that's not the only one. By the way, Japan had one at Manju that they ran for quite a long period of time too. These aren't science projects that nobody has operational experience with. We have operational experience with them. They were killed for, in many cases, political reasons. In some cases, practical reasons, because at the time, without the rest of the pieces of the puzzle, didn't make any sense. All right, but the real problem that you have is you take a look at, for example, what's going on with coal. Everyone says coal is terrible, it's dirty, it's blah, 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 you know, whatever.
Okay. Yeah, we can't wait to export it to China and India, and they're burning it over there.
And China is building 1,000 coal-fired power plants, yeah. And by the way, it takes them less than a year to put one up because you can't sue and make it take 20 years, okay?
All right, so the original, from what I recall, boy, I can't remember. I think the breeder reactor was supposed to go in Tennessee.
The premise behind this is if you're going to have civilian nuclear power at scale, you have to have something, you have to have a way to deal with the waste that they produce. If you don't, eventually you run into the problem that you don't have anywhere to store it, and you're forced to turn them off because you have nowhere to put the waste, okay?
So we've still got wasted Zion. The thing hasn't been running for 30 years.
Well, we now, every one of these things that is operating today has a spent fuel pool full of this stuff, and there's nowhere for it to go.
All right, so if we decide, if Tennessee was the place and is the place this time, if there is a this time, and there's a railroad line a mile from Carl's house, and they claim that they're going to take freight loads of this misspent fuel, I mean, all packaged in lead and all the best way you can do it, and it's going to run by your house, and by the way, this plant's going to be 10 miles from your house. You got your sandwich sign on and walk up and down the street or what?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine with it.
How many of your neighbors?
Don't know, but my job then becomes to educate them as to why that's a good thing rather than a bad thing.
And they're going to say, Carl, I'm with you, buddy. Come over, have a beer. I think this is a great, this is a Louisiana project.
Well, they may think that, that I've lost my marbles and, I mean, all I can do is try to educate people as to.
I'm with you, but still, you would probably rather have it 100 miles from your house than two.
No, because Chief, I have a nuclear plant, Watts Bar, that is upwind from me, the prevailing wind, okay, that's already there. And by the way, if we get into a no bullshit shooting war, and somebody hits that plant with a small tactical nuclear device, all right, I'm screwed, all right, because it's full of waste product that's been there since the thing was operating, and getting that out, that risk I cannot evade. It's there.
Yep.
So, would I like to reduce that risk by taking that spent fuel and reprocess it, put it back in a reactor and burn it up?
When you say reprocess it, it goes back to being regular fuel and you use it again?
Well, you take the high-level stuff that's extremely dangerous for stupid amounts of time, 100,000 years, right? And you put that back into a new fuel pin as part of the inert material that you have to have in the fuel pin. Right, instead of using uranium-238, which is typically what they use today, because there's a lot of it that you get when you enrich the fuel, you use this. You have to have something to take up that space, so you use that. Why? Because
do you ever destroy it, or just keep rotating?
Well, no, it does. That's the point. Is it does? It gets irradiated by the reactor as it operates. It gets broken down into lighter and less dangerous elements. Okay, so over time, the act of doing this over repeated cycles destroys the really bad stuff.
So it is the good idea. People thought, all right, can I shift? I know we're shifting, but we got a lot of stuff today.
Yeah.
This Israeli airstrike. Now, to most people, you're thinking of a bunch of pilots and planes. This was all missile, right?
Well, there were apparently some pilots and planes.
Okay. Were they just directing the missiles, or were they bombing?
Well, no, because there are now reports showing up in various media sources that there was no anti-aircraft fire directed at them. So obviously there were dudes in cockpits. Okay, because otherwise how would you know that?
Yeah.
Right? So obviously there was some, cruise missiles can be launched from aircraft and, things like that too.
Right, so there's, I'm looking at the map here.
Yeah, it's a combined operation. Is certainly what it looks like.
All right, so if you're leaving from Israel in a plane,
right?
I'm saying they had to have the okay from both Jordan and Saudi to get there.
You think?
Or they flew over Syria, Iraq, and just didn't give a crap what they said.
Which is a hazard. I mean, look, if you think these guys did all of this without some kind of knowledge that the overflight was going to happen, you're nuts. Yes, there was knowledge.
Well, does it bug you that your buddy and host of Stacks and Jacks has been talking for a month now about how quiet oil was and where are we, Friday, I'm going to say Monday, maybe last Friday, it started to perk up a little bit at a time to the point where I'm sitting there going, okay, what does somebody know?
And oh, yeah, well, it's only up 9% today. I mean, you know.
But it's up 20% in the week.
I understand.
Well, maybe 15, but I'm saying, yeah. Obviously, some people got wind of this on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday before we did.
Well, so that this was coming in some form. I mean, Netanyahu's been talking about this now for the last 3 months, right? I mean, the challenge here is this. I know that there's going to be plenty of people who rah-rah, we ought to get in the middle of it. I have to give, so far, the Trump administration's, you know, at least what Rubio said, I give them credit for saying, this ain't our fight. We're not getting involved in it, but God help you if you shoot at us. Okay?
Well, I mean, so, we say it's not our fight. We
now,
also
I'm
said
not
to,
sure that...
But
now,
I mean,
I don't know,
2 days ago, the guy said, we will not let... And by the way, I'm not disagreeing with him on this.
Keith, I'm not... I get that, okay? And look, and we've been running around for 30 years saying if Iran tries to develop a nuclear weapon, we're going to blow them to hell.
Well, my credibility gap among all politicians is pretty damn wide. But when you got a guy saying 2 days ago, under no circumstance these guys get a nuclear weapon, and today Israel kicks the crap out of them, oh, this isn't our... Well, come on. I mean we did satellite work. We did something for
them. I know. And you know what? Here's the other thing, too, and I've been pointing this out for the last 10-plus years. It is physically impossible to prevent a nation state that wants a nuclear weapon from obtaining one. It is physically impossible. It cannot
be done. Is more, I mean, I know that...
Can't be done, so...
Are we more concerned, I mean, we're concerned about both, obviously. We're more concerned about the ability to deliver it. And if somebody's got one, Pakistan, and they get no missiles, no planes, I'd rather them not have it because they could probably put it in a truck and send it somewhere, but...
Yeah,
but I mean, it's not as dangerous to me as if they had a plane that could get here as well or a missile.
Well, there's okay. So Iran. So yeah.
I didn't say it wasn't dangerous. I said not as.
Right, and actually, you know, I have an article that's up this morning on the Iran thing, and I said, look, the problem, the generalized issue, is that there is, you know, Iran has some. But not sophisticated like us and a handful of other nations, has some delivery capacity that doesn't involve sticking it in the back of a truck, okay, or in a boat.
Well, the high energy stuff that the Ukraine used against Russia, Lou says you can put on a very small, so, you know, we're talking 9 to 10 pounds drone. You're not going to do. I mean, what's the smallest nuclear device weigh? It's got to be a couple of hundred, doesn't it?
Oh, it's hundreds of pounds, and there's it depends on which way you go with this. The implosion bombs are smaller and lighter than a gun style one, simply because of the size requirements and stuff. But there's absolutely now the thing is the challenge is that, as I have often observed. Close only counts in horseshoes, hand grenades, and nuclear weapons.
And dancing.
The exception, by the way, with nuclear weapons, is if you're trying to hit hardened military targets where you actually have to hit them accurately. Okay, but if you're blowing up a city, being off by 5 miles doesn't matter. Okay.
Right, yeah.
So the thing is...
What was the Tom Clancy book about they blew one off in near the Super Bowl in Denver?
Oh, that was Sum of All Fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've got the movie. It's actually kind of good because they, you know, of course they thought the Russians did it. It wasn't. It was a terrorist. It was our plutonium that, you know, that came out of the Israeli stuff a long time ago.
I thought it was out of an Israeli plane they found in the sand or something, right?
Right. It was well, they lost an aircraft and it had a bomb on it.
Yeah, duh. Gee.
Well, I mean, you know, well,
yeah, we lost the plane, but that's not really the problem. It's got a nuclear bomb on it.
Yeah, the problem is there was a nuclear bomb on the plane when it went down. Yeah, well, we've got a couple that are missing off the East Coast that have never been found. And in
you mean in planes?
Yeah. They,
well, I mean, I mean, you're probably safer in the bottom of the Atlantic than they are in the sand.
Well, But if somebody
probably
was to
figure, is the operative word.
But there. If somebody was to figure out where it was and recover it, now you've got fissile material. Okay, so I mean, there's, you know,
yeah, I mean, nothing else in there will work, the blasting or anything like that. But
I'm just saying, yeah, the risk there is real. Okay,
well, sure,
that's not
sure.
BS. And so, but this is my concern with all of this is that there's been enough noise made about this for the last several months that Iran, if they have not pre-staged whatever it is they want to respond with in places that are, you know, presumably safe from being blown up, and hopefully, you know, from their point of view anyway, we don't know where they are, Israel doesn't know where they are, then they're really stupider than you'd think, because this is not a sneak attack that came out of the middle of nowhere, right?
Well, if you're going to be, I mean, I'm not big on international law, but if you're from Iran and aren't a nut job, which who knows, if you know that, well, Iraq, I don't know who's in charge there, but if you know if Saudi gave Israel the okay to fly over Saudi to get to your place, does that make them a target?
Well, my position has always been, and I've said this many times in the context of the...
By the way, I'm looking at this map. Sorry, I'm looking at this map. The only way Israel could get there without going over somebody is to fly all the way down the Red Sea, across the Gulf of whatever, and back up. And it's a long way.
By the way, that's and that's people's territory too.
Well, you're over the water most of the time.
Well, it doesn't matter. You have literal. I mean, there's. Go ahead and try to make that argument if you're 100 miles offshore and you're not in our EEZ and you could do what you want. No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's that too. So I think, my concern with this is that obviously this is a gross escalation in the use of force in the region, but it's hardly new.
But they did that how many years ago? They blasted the.
Oh, I know they blew up. They blew up Natanz,
killed the three top dogs, right?
Well, from what we know so far, they've essentially assassinated three very high level Iranian scientists, nuclear scientists, who are working on this stuff.
I'm jumping all over because I just have so many questions that I've read innumerable times that infiltrating Iran with boots on the ground in terms of like agents and stuff is probably the toughest thing we've ever tried to do, or that it's virtually impossible to have somebody on the ground over there. Is that still, I mean, if that's true, how do you know where these guys are?
Well, it's Iran has a very long history of both being abused and gamed by foreign powers, right? The whole thing with the Shah and the BP situation that got us involved in it originally, which was a complete load of crap, and we did it anyway. I mean, all sorts of stuff.
Do you think we're getting help from people who want this group overturned?
I think what we have is a sectorial conflict that is probably never going to go away. People have fought over that land and the reason for it hell. What do you think the Balfour Declaration is all about?
Yeah.
This is not a new problem.
Well, everybody's been there since the first oil well hit oil.
Well, not only that, it's beyond that. It's before then, okay?
Yeah, but nobody cared before then.
They did for religious reasons, right?
Nobody from the U.S.
for economic
cared.
Reasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, nobody cared for economic reasons until oil showed up, okay?
Yeah.
But for all the other reasons they did, and it's always been a hot spot, and that's not going to go away anytime soon. But as long as it remains within those nations and those areas, then I don't think it means much to the market on a whole, although it's certainly going to have an impact on oil prices, duh. However, the probability that, I mean, at some point, that someone over on one of these sides is going to say, I'm losing, I've got a nuclear weapon.
Well, you try and blockade the Strait of Hormuz or that kind of crap.
Well, the whole problem with war in a world where that genie's out of the bottle and it's not going back in, is that it only takes one side of such a conflict that is crazy enough to say, we're all effed, we're going to use them before we lose them.
Well, we got a dash here, but Shakespeare, Carl, Cry Havoc and Let Loose the Dogs of War, Shakespeare, right? Or was that Plato or both of them?
Yeah, I think it was both. But I'm.
Once you start it, you don't know where it's going to land.
Well, that's exactly the problem, and I don't think this is a small issue at all. I think the potential for this to get out of control. I mean, is it likely to get out of control? Not terribly likely, but if it does, I don't think you're going to get a lot of warning. I think this is one of those things that all of a sudden, out of the middle of nowhere, you know. I mean, if you all of a sudden, Chief, I will say this: if you and the other people that track all this stuff on an all-time basis, if you start seeing people buying spy puts by the truck,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I
think I would be either protected or out at that point.
Well, I mean, the entrenched government over there reminds me quite a bit of the entrenched government in Japan. During their mischievous days, I'll use the term mischievous. I mean, these guys are perfectly capable of lobbing a nuclear weapon at somebody without the support of 90% of their people.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem.
But Chief, that's on both sides. But the thing is, I mean, look, my nightmare scenario is that Iran manages to hit Dimora, okay, which is a allegedly civilian nuclear facility that has been a big part of Israel's weapons development over the years. But it's a juicy, fat target.
They don't really have a... They don't have a missile that can make orbit, right? So you're going to see it coming.
Well, it's well defended, duh.
How do you get... okay. We got a dash here, but I can see how a missile or a fighter jet gets from Israel, especially if you can refill it in the air, which makes me wonder if we had part of that. Yeah. How the hell do you get a drone from Iran to Israel?
Without it being detected and shot, I don't know. But it's again, it's quantities.
I can't tell here from the map. What do you suppose the closest point of the border is? It's got to be, is it 1,000 miles? 800?
It's a lot further than your small, cheap drone is going to go.
It's got to be like from here to New York, easy. It's all the way across Iraq.
But you know what? Then again, just think about what happened here with Ukraine. They managed to get a bunch of trucks full of cheap drones within 50 miles of Russian. Yeah.
I agree. So. All right, bud. Well, let's talk on Tuesday. Again, we've got next Thursday, no show. I'm going to miss my Carl and Andrew and Wayne fix.
And then you're going to be crazy enough because you got to honor the shooting team.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. SP Futures now down 59, so we sunk a little bit. We got back to down 50 from down 125 to down 50. Now we're down 59. Gold, I've got gold is continuing to move up here. And for some reason, silver's not going with gold here. And I don't know why that is, Carl, but in the last couple of days it has not. Maybe because Russell said silver's the one you want to buy. wait till I talk to him next week.
Oh, look at how that works, right?
That's what happens when you talk to professors.
That's the kiss of death. Yeah. Right. It's like getting a Kramer recommendation.
Oh, God. good job, Ricky. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.